This morning we are continuing in our series on, this is the last word of salvation, as we've been going through a different series of words throughout the Bible. We are transitioning this week from our study of words about salvation to a study of words about faith, and specifically our response to salvation. And of course, the word gospel, which we're going to talk about today, like so many words that we've studied, was a normal word that took on special meaning through its use by the inspired prophets, right, throughout the New Testament. Now, this word, of course, as some words do, has an extra step of obfuscation. I love the word obfuscation because it's hard to say and it's kind of like describing itself, coming from Old English. This word gospel doesn't even come from Greek, comes from Old English rather than Greek or Hebrew. The word godspell, meaning good story. That's what it means. God, good, story, spell. A good story or a good message, that's where we get our word gospel. Modern translators of the New Testament, depending on the version that you use, vacillate between the word, translating it as good news or gospel. And again, I don't know, why don't we just get rid of the word gospel and just translate it good news all the time? I don't know why we have this extra word that is not really applicable here. But good news, right? Typically, when the context is not religious, that is good news about harvest or good news about defeat of the enemies in the Old Testament, right? It wouldn't really be in the New Testament so much, but typically that's when they translate good news, or when the verb, because we don't have like a verb for that. I can't gospel you. What do? I proclaim the good news, which we read in that quote from Isaiah that Pat read earlier, that when it says proclaim the good news, that's the same word here, gospel, but of course the verb form. And so when referring to the specific news about Jesus, translators typically use the word gospel, which again, you don't have to use the word gospel. Why do we have another word? It's just good news, a good story, a good message. And this is a foundational word in the New Testament, beginning very early on in Matthew chapter 4, really beginning of each of the synoptic gospels. Matthew 4:23, he went throughout all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the good news. This is the verb, right? He's gospeling them, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and every affliction among the people. The first verse of Mark, the beginning of the good news of Jesus Christ. Now, some of your versions will have gospel. I just decided to take out that word. It's good news. Luke 2, verse 10, the angel said to them, "Fear not." This is the angel talking to the shepherds in the field. "I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, who is Christ the Lord." The beginning of each of these, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, what are they making clear? The story that they are telling us is good news. It is a good message. It is really the best news. Now, they don't use the word best, but we know it to be the best news. Now, it's interesting, John doesn't use this word, gospel. He just doesn't use it for whatever reason. But we call them the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, because Jesus is the center of this good news, right? This is the good news about Jesus, as opposed to, again, the good news about your sheep, or the good news about you found a coin, or the good news about you had got a new job, any other kind of good news that we would use there. This is the good news, the good news of Jesus. And so we come back to this, Luke chapter 4, verse 16. He came to Nazareth where he'd been brought up, and as was his custom, he went in the synagogue on the Sabbath day. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was given to him, and he unrolled the scroll and found the place where it's written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me." This is a prophecy, right? "Because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor." Now, this is the word that we're talking about, gospel. This is the Greek word here, the verb form. But then he describes this, Isaiah and then Jesus, of course, reading this, describes this good news proclamation in a number of different ways, right? So proclaim good news to the poor, to proclaim liberty to the captives. That's good news. You're captive, now you're free. Now, what are we talking about here? Free from sin, free from the fear of death, free from guilt and shame, free from all of these things that would spiritually capture us. "He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captive." What else is the good news? "The recovering of sight to the blind," which literally happened in a number of places in the New Testament. He literally did that, gave them their sight. But in a more general sense, to proclaim the recovering of sight to the blind, well, we could think about that in the miracles, but I think there's more to it than that too, right? Those who, again, who are spiritually blind, who do not have purpose, who do not understand why they're here, who do not see what God has given them, but we're proclaiming that. the recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. This is good news. And I want to note, of course, that this good news was always the plan of God. His plan to justify us, we looked at the word justify last week, to declare us righteous, to make us right in his presence again, was always going to be through this good news. That Jesus was not an afterthought, not a plan B, this was always plan A. And that good news begins when? When does the good news begin? Doesn't it begin in Genesis when he talks about the offspring of the woman, that he'll be your enmity, I'll put enmity between your offspring and hers. You will bruise his heel and he will crush your head. That is the beginning of the good news. The enemy of mankind, this serpent, Satan, will be defeated. That's when we hear the first part of it, the good news of Jesus. Now, through the New Testament, this term, good news, takes on a significant meaning. Because, again, like all, not all of the words we've talked about today, this year, most of the words we've talked about this year, in our language, have become sort of religious, specialized words. But again, gospel, good news, that's just a word. You can tell a good story or a good message about any number of things. My favorite hockey team is in the Western Conference Finals. That's good news. Now, maybe not to you, maybe you don't care, but that's sort of the point, right? You think about good news is a relative term. It's good depending on what? Who benefits? Now, if it's just me and it's I benefit to the exclusion of you, it's not really good news for you, good news for me. But as we think about how they use this generic term, it really took on a synonymous meaning with Jesus himself. And the way that the writers talk about the word gospel, good news, they sort of use it interchangeably with the subject of the good news. Because the good news is about Jesus. Philippians chapter 1, verse 27. Only let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel of Christ. It's interesting. Not worthy of Christ, that's what we want, but worthy of the good news. How can I be worthy of good news? How can I even be that? How can I be worthy of a message? Yeah, that's what he's saying here, right? Let your manner of life be worthy of the good news of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of you that you are standing firm in one spirit, with one mind striving side by side. I'm not striving for Jesus. Striving for the faith of the gospel. Striving for the faith in the good news. How can I strive for a message or an idea? And not frightened in anything by your opponents. This is a clear sign to them for their destruction, but of your salvation and that from God, for it has been granted to you. And here's where we see this sort of interchangeability here, right? It has been granted to you that for the sake of Christ. Well, I was worthy of the message. Now I'm doing things for the sake of the subject of the message, the sake of Jesus, right? For the sake of Christ, you should not only believe in him, but also suffer. And now again, I'm not striving for the faith in the gospel. I'm suffering for his sake, for Jesus' sake, engaged in the same conflict that you saw I had, and now hear that I still have. Worthy of the good news is the same in this text, and the way that the writers use this word throughout the New Testament, worthy of Jesus. To strive for the good news is to strive for Jesus. This is a vital idea. You cannot separate the person of Jesus from the news about him. Because fundamentally, his mission is to proclaim good news. Everything about him is good news. And everything about him should be shared like good news. And in fact, when we do not share the good news, we are running antithesis to his very purpose. There has to be this element of a story to be shared, a story to be told. To follow Jesus is not just to follow a person, but is to invest yourself in his mission, which was to proclaim. What did he just read it? What was his message? The Lord has anointed me to do what? to proclaim good news. The good news that there is salvation, there is freedom, there is sight, there is knowledge, there is renewal. All of these things wrapped up in what we're striving for. I'm trying to be worthy of his message. And I'm trying to strive for the faith in that message. The good news is specific, particular, and supremely important. We can think about Galatians 1, 6 through 9. I am astonished that you are so quickly deserting him who called you in the grace of Christ and are turning to a different gospel. And note again the interchangeability here between the subject of the news and the news itself. You're turning from him who called you to a different message, turning from a person to a thing. Right? There's an interchangeability here, right? You're deserting him who called you in the grace of Christ and are turning to a different good news, a different good story. And this bolded and underlined part here, what? Not that there is another one, right? You're saying there is. You think there is. You think there's better news. You think there's a message, a story that supplants the one that we've given. There isn't. There isn't another gospel. There isn't another version of good news. There's only one version of it. But there are some who trouble you and want to distort the gospel of Christ. But even if we or an angel from heaven should preach to you a version of good news, right? If we tell you a story contrary to the one that we preached to you, let him be accursed. As we've said before, so now I say again, if anyone is preaching to you a version of good news, and I'm translating it because, again, I don't like these extra religious words, gospel. It doesn't need to be there. It's good news. If anyone is preaching to you a version of good news contrary to the one you received, let him be accursed. Messing with, altering, obfuscating, there's that word, I got to use it twice, the specific good news that Jesus brought and taught is serious business. Serious enough that you will be cursed. We don't curse people very often. Now, you could think about swearing at people and using swear words, but the idea of cursing is not just to swear at somebody, but is what? To consign them to hell. That's what the idea of accursed is here, is that you are, it's the opposite of blessed, right? That instead of wishing good for you, I wish evil to befall you. Specifically in this context, what's the evil that will befall? Those who alter the message, those who change the substance of what Jesus came to do and teach. What is the consequence? What is the evil that will befall them? Separation, hell, lostness. That is a curse. So when we think about this idea of let him be accursed, not even just a person, but what? If we or an angel from heaven, a messenger from heaven, should appear to you into this awesome, majestic sight, and you see this angelic messenger, and he says something that's different from the good news that was preached, let that angel be accursed. There is one good news. And we might say it this way. There is only one best news. Anything else you can tell somebody is inferior. Anything else you could share with somebody is not as good. It is worse in some way. Either it is worse because you've altered it and changed what it is and changed what it says, or you can think about it in a more mundane way. I tell you that Gideon's really good at basketball. You know that? Great. Awesome. That's not as good as telling you that Jesus died for you. Even though that's not sinful, it's not sinful for me to tell you things about my son. It's not the best news. It's not the best thing I could tell you. There is one good news. And that is the news of Jesus dying for your sins. He came to be that good news and to proclaim that good news. So when we think about contrary to the one we preached to you, contrary to the one you received, what exactly is that good news then? What is the thing that was preached to them? And the words that we've studied thus far, why I've structured the series that we have this year, form the basis of the good news. You think about the words that we've studied already. There is a God, and those words about God. He has revealed his will. We have a problem, and God has provided an answer. That's the good news. That's it. That's the whole thing. Doesn't take very long to tell the good news. Now you can get bogged down in the details, right? You can get bogged down in the technicalities and the theology and the evidences, and there's a lot of stuff, right? I'm not saying you should never think about those things. But telling somebody the gospel doesn't really take that long. Like, even if you want to do thorough, you can do it in 10 minutes. There's a God, who God is, he's revealed his will, how do we know what he wants? There's a problem that we see based on who God is and the will that he's revealed to us. That problem is sin and wrath. But fortunately, there's an answer. And that answer is the salvation that comes through Jesus Christ. There it is. That's the whole good news. I just told you the gospel. You could do that. You could tell people that, right? That's something you could tell people. That's something we could proclaim to people. And in fact, the term itself implies and confers this very responsibility. Mark 16, 14 through 16. Before we read that, in a more general sense, conflating the good news with Christ himself to live a manner worthy of the message itself means what? Why is it called that? Because it is meant to be told. It's meant to be told. To live a manner worthy of the good news of Christ is to tell the good news of Christ. Mark 16, 14 through 16. Afterward, he appeared to the 11 themselves as they were reclining at the table. He rebuked them for their unbelief and hardness of heart, because they had not believed those who saw him after he had risen. And he said to them, go into all the world and proclaim the gospel. Again, what? Go into all the world and teach and say and tell people the good news to everybody, to all the whole creation. Whoever believes in me and is immersed will be saved, but whoever does not believe will be condemned. How do you feel when you have good news to share? How do you feel about that? Something good happens to you? Don't you want to share it? Isn't it kind of lame when something really good happens to you and you have no one to tell it to and you just sort of have it by yourself and it's like, well, that was great, but I really wish I could share this with my friends. Now, of course, you have social media, so it doesn't take very long to just post it if everybody knows. And then the streams of light comes in. It's like this weird dopamine rush. And yet, I think we sometimes are much more excited about telling people about a particularly good sandwich I had than I am about the good news of Jesus. One of these things is not like the other. If you really think it's good news, the best news that you've ever had in your whole life, isn't it worth sharing? How do you feel when people you care about have good news and they didn't tell you? Something good happened to somebody in your life, maybe it was your child or your parent or your sibling or a friend at work or whoever, somebody you're close to. Something really good happens in their life and you don't find out until way later and you don't even find out from them, you find out from somebody else. How did that feel? Feels like you were excluded, right? Like maybe the relationship wasn't what you thought. Why didn't you tell me about this good news? Isn't that inherent in the idea of good news? Is that I will share the news. It's not good news if I don't tell anybody. Then it's just a thing that I know. It becomes good news when I tell people. We'll end with Romans 1, 16 through 17. For I am not ashamed of this good news. For it is the power of God to salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. Why am I not ashamed of it? Because it is the most important thing that anyone will ever hear. Again, you can tell people about work, you can tell people about politics, you can tell people about stuff that happens in your life. There is literally nothing you will ever tell anybody that matters more than the good news about Jesus. And I can say that with 100% confidence. I don't have to qualify it at all. You will never tell anyone anything more important than the good news of Jesus, because it is the power of God to salvation. For everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek, for in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith for faith. As it is written, the righteous will live or shall live by faith. In the good news of Jesus, we see the righteousness of God. Revealed for what? For those who will have faith, those who will believe. How many times have we already read? We just read it again, right? Whoever believes and is immersed will be saved, but whoever does not believe will be condemned. Whoever does not have faith, we could say it that way. Do we ever act ashamed of this good news that we claim to believe? And let's put it this way. If you believe it, why would you be ashamed of it? If you believe that there is a message that can turn people into something totally different and better than they were, that can take people from a state of eternal lostness to a state of eternal salvation, that can transform and alter and improve and benefit anyone who ever hears it, why would you be ashamed of that? We can flip it. If you're ashamed of it, I'm not sure you believe it. If you're ashamed of it, you either don't believe it or don't understand it. One of those two things. You either don't believe the message itself, or you don't understand something about it. Because understanding the good news can only lead to a desire to proclaim it. The good news demands a response. Will you live by faith? Or refuse to accept the news as either good or true? Because those are the two things, right? You hear the good news and you can do one of two things. Well, three things. You can either believe it as what it says, or you can refuse to think it's good. Some people just think it's not good. Or you can refuse to think it's true at all. Next week, we're going to begin to unpack this faithful response. What does that mean? For faith to faith, as it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. How do I faithfully respond to that message? But we know, of course, we've looked at it several times over the past few weeks. What have we seen already? Even in Mark, what have we seen? Faith, immersion, to turn from your old life, to confess him before others. We know these things. The good news is only good if what? If it has an effect in your life. Otherwise, didn't do anything for you. But maybe you're here today and you're ready for it to change you. It can change your life for the better. If you're ready, come while we stand and sing.